Okay, thank you very much. Let me take the opportunity, first of all, to thank the organizers for the very kind invitation to participate in this program. It's been very interesting, the privilege coming from a different part of physics and sitting and listening to the discussions and learning a lot of new things, or beginning to learn a bit, I would say. When Tommaso asked me to give a talk in this workshop, I first hesitated because I thought, what possibly can I tell a quantum controller? But having written recently a paper with the word control in the title, I thought, well, why not give it a chance? But having spent 2 weeks together with you guys, I come to understand that what you mean by control is, of course, infinitely more profound and deep than what we lowly condensed matter people mean by control. But for us, control is simply having a knob where we can turn something on and off. So there will be no closed loop learning or feedback or quantum circuits or anything of that sort in this talk. So my excuse for still giving the talk is that the control here is of something that actually fits very well into the other part of the title of the program, the complex quantum system. The Condo effect, in fact, one of the most intriguing, strange, and beautiful quantum antibody phenomena that we encountered in physics, problem that has been with us for half a century, still with us, I would say, and in this context, played out in a novel, on a novel platform in a topological insulator, also known as a quantum spin Hall system in two dimensions. So, maybe you will still find this of some interest, maybe as an inspiration for doing some future quantum simulations of this kind of physics. Certain things we think we understand, but many things are still to be understood. And this is really a quantum antibody problem that would benefit from a quantum simulator. So the work has been done together with, well, I should say the work has really been done by my students, Erik Eriksson, PhD student in Gothenburg, Anders Ström, who's now just started a postdoc in Germany, in Braunschweig, and Giri Sharma, guest student back in Paris. So I'll begin with giving a very brief introduction to what the quantum spin Hall system is, tell you some of the basics. And zooming in on the edge of such a system, where all the interesting action is, becomes particularly intriguing when you add a magnetic impurity, a spin 1/2 magnetic impurity. So you may like to think about it as a qubit coupled to an electronic environment. And given that, I will then come to our work, where we have added also a spin-orbit interaction of a special type, so-called Rashba spin-orbit interaction, which generically is present in the kind of samples, the experimental samples, where this kind of physics has been found. So it's important to have this additional spin-orbit interaction present in the modeling to have a faithful description of the system. And finally, I will show you how one can actually exploit this spin-orbit interaction to control in this mundane set of sense of turning on and off this quantum antibody state by will, by electric gate. Time permitting, I will end with a little epilogue and try to argue that maybe, in fact, this piece of physics is could be of interest to some of you beyond just as a curiosity or an inspiration for doing quantum simulation in the future, because the Kondo effect have been proposals that one can exploit the Kondo effect to produce long distance qubit entanglement in solid state devices or in cold atoms devices trapped in optical lattices using minimal control. So maybe, in fact, something useful will come out of this story. Okay, a useful way of thinking about the quantum spin Hall system is to start with a simpler quantum Hall system, or more precisely, what's known as an integer quantum Hall system, and I'm sure that all of you have heard about this. Some of you probably know about it. Where in this cartoon picture, electrons are confined to a two-dimensional plane, which in the laboratory would be an interface or a quantum well in a semiconductor heterostructure. Now, the Catroon doesn't quite give justice to the many-body character of this physics. If this is a little sheet of size, say, 1 square centimeter, you would have something of the order of 10 billion electrons here. So it's really very much a many-body problem. So, given that, one applies a strong magnetic field perpendicular to the surface, which will lock the electrons into cycloplan orbits in the picture, except at the edge of the sample, where the orbits will bump into the boundary, forming skipping currents. And if we quantize these currents, or we pretend that we can quantize them, we will obtain what's known as chiral edge states. That is, quantum states that carry charge, or electrons, spin-polarized electrons, in one direction. There's a distinct chirality to the system. Now, this implies that there is no channel for backscattering, so this system is robust against disorder of various kinds. Impurities, dislocations, defects, you have it. The electrons will just keep running here, so if you apply a bias across the sample, the cycloplan orbits will get stuck at impurities inside the bulk, but there will be the possibility of driving a current living at the edge of the sample. And this really explains the extraordinary robustness of this system. This ballistic transport along the edge implies that also the Hall conductance, the transverse conductance, would be quantized, the hallmark of a quantum Hall system, shown in this paper by Bittinger. Now, given this remarkable phenomenon, one may inquire whether it requires breaking of time reversal symmetry. If you look in a textbook, you will often find a statement that this really very remarkable phenomenon hinges upon the fact that you have broken time reversal symmetry by adding a magnetic field. This is what endows the system with this robustness. So could it be that one could have something similar, a robust many-body electronic state, stable against local perturbations without breaking time invariance? Well, to find out, let's make a little Gedanken experiment following this paper by Benedig and Zhang, where again electrons are confined to two dimensions, now living on a disk, with a disk pierced by a uniformly charged cylinder, like so, giving rise to a radial electric field, which in turn produces a spin-orbit interaction, according to the textbooks. So E cross K, K is the wave number, an electron dotted into sigma, the vector of Pauli matrices, representing the spin operators. And written out in the two-dimensional geometry, you get this expression here. And note that this interaction is time reversal invariant. Now, comparing this picture to a quantum Hall system, shaped in the form of a disk, and writing down the vector potential in a symmetric gauge, the Lorentz force will have this expression here, like so. And as we saw on the previous slide, this Lorentz force will produce a chiral edge current, a spin-polarized current running along around the edge of the sample. Now, if I compare these two expressions, the expression for the Lorentz force and the expression for the spin-orbit interaction, you see they look very similar. The essential difference is that the spin-orbit interaction has a spin dependence. There's a sigma Z matrix, Pauli matrix, that samples the projection of the spin along the quantization axis. And from there, we immediately conclude that in this case, we will have, again, edge states, but counter-propagating, depending on the spin. So we have, in this picture, a clockwise state, with electrons running clockwise with spin up, and another state with electrons running counterclockwise with spin down, or vice versa, depending how we define the spin direction. And this is how we can think of a quantum spin Hall system. This picture is really a cartoon picture of a quantum spin Hall system, insulating in a bulk with conducting edge states at the boundary. Helical edge states, states being time reverse copies of each other, So these states form Kramers pairs. And this is the simple cartoon picture that you should maybe carry in your in the back of your mind in the rest of my talk. Now, the first proposal that something like this may appear in nature or could be designed in the laboratory, found in the laboratory, was made by Kane and Millais, 2005, building on an insight by Duncan Haldane back in the 80s, arguing along a very different line of argument than the Gedanken experiment I showed you here. But again, the crux of the argument by Kane and Millais is that you have some strong spin-orbit interaction, and that spin-orbit interaction could produce at low temperatures a quantum spin Hall insulator for graphene. So graphene would turn from a semi-metal into a quantum spin Hall insulator at low temperatures. Now, as it turned out, this proposal didn't quite pan out because the spin-orbit interaction is too weak in this material. But sometime later, Banevig, Zhu, and Zhang made a similar proposal that this remarkable state, with the helical edge states at the edge, carrying a current and bulk being insulating, could be realized in a mercury telluride quantum well. So this is a heterostructure, a semiconductor heterostructure with stacks of semiconducting materials put on top of each other. The quantum well is marked in red, a thin little layer, so thin that the transverse motion of the electrons is frozen out, and they move really in a two-dimensional geometry, the well. And here is an artist's rendition of how you can think of it. So inside the well, the material is insulating, and at the edge you have these helical currents. Okay, now what about the stability of this system? We saw that in the quantum Hall state, the stability was guaranteed by having only electrons moving in one direction. We had the chiral edge state because we had broken the time reversal symmetry. Now, in this case, we have counterpropagating states with opposite spins, and why couldn't they scatter into each other? And by doing so, we will lose the ballistic propagation of electrons, and the system could possibly localize. Well, to make a long story short, that doesn't happen, provided that the perturbations that we add respect time reversal invariance. And the qualitative argument is represented in this picture, where you have bulk energy bands drawn in blue, and in the bulk band gap, there are drawn the dispersion relations for, say, the spin up edge state and black for the spin down edge states. And by Kramer's theorem, these dispersions have to cross at the center of the Brillouin zone at zero momentum. Remember the Kramer theorem telling us that if you have a spin 1/2 state, its time reverse copy must have the same energy as that state. So that means that we cannot undo this crossing, because then we would violate Kramer's theorem. We can't do that, because if we assume there is only time reversal perturbations present, and that means no gap can open up at the edge, and therefore there can be no backscattering, because if there were backscattering, a gap could open up. That is the indirect argument. So one concludes that indeed the transport of charge along the edges and applying a bias will be ballistic, 2 times the conductance quantum, 2 because there are 2 parallel edges along which you can drive a current. Okay, this argument, as you some of you may realize, crucially depends on having a single Kramer's pair along an edge, or possibly an odd number. If you have an even number of Kramer's pair, you can actually recombine them in such a way that the gap could open. And remarkably, the parity of the number of Kramer's pairs at the edge, this number being odd or even, that number is a topological invariant. It can be calculated from the band structure of the bulk. And this is the reason why we call these systems topological insulators in 2 dimensions. It's just a quantum spin Hall system. Okay, now what if time reversal symmetry is broken? For example, by putting in a magnetic impurity. What then happens? Well, here's a case study with a manganese ion with valence 2+. This ion has a large and positive single ion anisotropy, which means that at low temperatures, the higher spin components will be frozen out, and you're left with an effective spin 1/2 impurity, a single orbit as a qubit. And moreover, this anisotropy, single ion anisotropy, will produce an anisotropy also in the spin exchange interaction between the impurity and the electrons. So if you look at this carefully, some of you will recognize this as an anisotropic Kondo interaction, where the notation psi here is simply a spinner with the spin up and spin down components at the edge. J perp is the amplitude for a spin exchange. Sigma plus and sigma minus are the racing longing operators for the electron spins. S minus S plus, the corresponding for the impurity spin, and here's the longitudinal component. Okay, now if you look at this interaction, you will say, where is the breaking of the time reversal? This is a perfectly time reversal invariant interaction. If I flip all the spins, nothing happens. But the issue is whether, although the interaction is explicitly time reversal invariant, whether it could still produce a spontaneous breaking of time reversal and hence collapse the quantum spin Hall state. Because what it does is to enable electrons to flip their spins. So one may worry now that there could be backscattering in the system. Now to find out whether this happens, let me back up a little bit and remind you of the basic picture of the Kondo effect. We heard first week from John about adiabatic elimination. For me, it was a new concept. But I come to realize that what you do in adiabatic elimination, removing high frequency modes, is also an ideology that we apply frequently in Kondo's metaphysics. We call it randomization group. And here are the famous randomization group equations for, I should say, the ordinary Kondo problem, not specifically the problem I'm discussing with helical edge electrons, but the ordinary Kondo problem that was considered already in the early 70s by Phil Anderson. So what we do, we change the energy scale. So D here is a cutoff for the energy, telling us the largest possible energy in the system in the sense of the largest energy for which our model makes sense. So changing that cutoff, taking it down, will change the coupling constants, the amplitude to the spin exchange and to the Ising longitudinal part, and this is how they change. And you see immediately from the minus signs here, if I lower the cutoff, that is, if I go to lower energies, the couplings will become stronger and vice versa. So the Kondo problem is actually an example of what is known as an asymptotically free theory. Things get strongly coupled at low energies and weakly coupled at high energies. And at some characteristic energy scale, these couplings will become so large that the problem will be completely dominated by the coupling to the impurity. That interaction will dominate over the kinetic energy. And in that regime, or below that energy scale, conventional methods, perturbation theory, etc., will no longer work. We go into a non-perturbative regime and find new physics. And the essence, what we find is that in this strong coupling regime, because of the strong coupling between the impurity and the electrons, the impurity will favor the formation of a many-body singlet with surrounding electrons. And that is what we call a Kondo screening. So the impurity spin appears to be screened away from the remaining electrons in the system. Now, in one dimension, with electrons hopping on a one-dimensional lattice or on a chain, by the Pauli principle, you see that this will imply a puncturing of the one-dimensional lattice, because this site now, well, I've only drawn part of the singlet here, but anyway, there is a spin up and a spin down on that site. So the Pauli principle says that this site now becomes inaccessible to the remaining electrons. So effectively, the remaining electrons of the system see this punctured or split lattice, and if there is only nearest neighbor hopping, we conclude that this is an insulator. So it seems from this simple little argument that putting in a single magnetic impurity in this one-dimensional system will immediately collapse the helical edge state to become an insulator, because the same, essentially the same picture here we expect should apply also for the helical edge link. Okay, does it happen really? Well, to find out, we have to add electron-electron interactions, which are important in one dimension. Now, I will not tire you with the analysis, which is quite technical. It was first performed in a paper by Matsiko et al., and this is the essential result that comes out. So, on the vertical axis is conductance along an edge. On the horizontal axis is temperature. And this line here is the ballistic conductance, G, two times the conductance quantum. Two, again, because, as I said, we have two parallel edges along which current can flow. And following this, or looking at this red curve, which is the physically relevant curve, says a weak interaction, weak electron-electron interaction, meaning that the Coulomb interaction among electrons is well screened from nearby metallic gates in the system. We obtain at large temperatures what we expect from an asymptotically free theory, because the impurity decouples from the electrons, so we recover the ballistic conductance. But as we go down, we expect that the conductance should go down. In fact, from my simple cartoon argument, we expect it to drop to zero because the lattice becomes punctured. But that does not happen. In fact, it goes up, and at zero temperature, when we reach the ground state, we recover perfect conductance. Very, very strange and very unexpected. This is not at all what conventional theory predicts. So how is this possible? This was the picture. But it does not apply. Well, the interpretation, and I should say now, this is an interpretation which lacks microscopic microscopic argument. So this would be something very interesting to try to analyze more in detail, maybe with a quantum simulator. But the argument, the conceptual argument, is that since the electrons live, the electrons that couple to the impurity live along the edge of a two-dimensional system, there is an edge reconstruction in such a way that the electrons simply bypass this punctured part of the lattice and continue to carry current. And the argument proceeds via reference to the topological nature of this system. But to me, I think this is more words and kind of attempt to explain something that we would like to understand better in detail. Okay, be it as it is, there is one important thing missing in the analysis, which is the presence of a Rushbaugh-spin orbit interaction, generically present in semiconductor heterostructures. Now, this interaction should not be confused with the intrinsic atomic spin orbit interaction, which produces the quantum spin Hall effect in the first place. This is rather a spin orbit interaction which comes from the asymmetry of the confining potential, that holds the electrons in the plane, somewhere in the middle of this heterostructure, say, together with possible electric fields from electrodes placed on top of the sample. These combined effects will produce an effective spin-orbit interaction of this form, as was argued by Bishkov and Rushbaugh some years ago, in one dimension along the edge of the sample, the two-dimensional sample that we are interested in, where all the interesting things happen, but we have these helical states. We have this simpler expression for the spin-orbit interaction. Now we see immediately there's a sigma y matrix, so having used the conventional basis here, we realize that this spin-orbit interaction doesn't conserve spin. Part of the nature of a spin orbit interaction. So this looks really bad. It looks like a calamity for the quantums being Hall state, the edge states, because we defined the states as being helical with spin locked to momentum, and now this Rashba's spin orbit interaction violates this. However, as it turns out, all that matters is that you have a single Kramers pair on the edge. You don't have to have this locking of spin to momentum. Now, in fact, you can recover it by a simple unitary transformation. So here is the kinetic term for the edge electrons, Dirac Hamiltonian. Here's the Rashba interaction. And simply by doing a unitary transformation, by judiciously rotating the spin quantization axis by some angle determined by this expression, we can absorb the Rashba interaction into the kinetic energy. We get a new theory, a new free theory, where spin is now quantized along Z prime. So this Rashba rotated spinner will still define the Kramers pair. And this rotation does nothing to the electron-electron interaction. It's just a Coulomb interaction, spin rotational invariant. However, and interestingly now, the Condé interaction that we put in will become affected by this rotation, because the Condé interaction, as I showed you, had originally an isotropy coming from the single ion anisotropy of the magnetic impurity. And carrying through, one finds that in the new theory, this Condé interaction will have this more complicated form. So the exchange part will now be completely anisotropic. We will have what's called an XYZ condom model. And on top of that, there is a non-collinear term. It looks like a Dzerzhinsky-Maria interaction, but with a plus sign rather than a minus sign. And importantly now, these couplings, JY prime, JZ prime, and JNC, and C for non-collinear, depend on the Rashba coupling alpha, which can be tuned by the bias of on the gate voltage. So here we have a means of actually electrically tuning how the electrons interact with this impurity. And let me show you one result that we obtained, essentially using the same tools, bosonization, randomization groups, as was done by Matsiko et al. And this is one result, which I'd like to show you. On the vertical axis is the strength of the electron-electron interaction. On the horizontal axis is this angle telling us how much we have to rotate the spin quantization axis so as to absorb Rashba into the kinetic term. So theta will be a function of alpha. Alpha is the amplitude of Rashba, and alpha in turn will be a function of the bias across the well from our gate. And the colors denote the crossover temperature, the characteristic energy scale below which the coupling between the magnetic impurity and electrons become large. So you see immediately here, I forgot to tell you that this parameter is such that one, when k naught is one, when we are up here, we have non-interacting electrons, and when k naught becomes lesser than one, we have more and more strongly interacting electrons, strongly having weaker and weaker screening from nearby metallic gates. And you see immediately from the color coding that this crossover temperature, that is the regime below which the system tries to achieve this screening, this formation of this many-body singlet, is facilitated by electron-electron interaction. You have a higher energy, higher temperature when you have stronger electron-electron interaction. The most interesting part of the picture, the surprising part here, is that in this regime here, in the shaded dome, the non-collinear term in the new Rashba-rotated Condé interaction will dominate the randomization group flow, meaning that in this region, Condé screening will be obstructed. In this region here, the system will not favor a singlet, a many-body singlet. So by tuning across this dome, by varying the gate voltage and hence varying theta, we can go from a region where there is Condé screening, where there is Condé effect, into a region where we lost it. So this is the essence of the control, the electrical control of this phenomenon.
I'm a bit confused. Maybe you can just help me understand something.
Yeah.
I feel like there's two track as you dot one associated with the robustness of the edge states, and the other associated with condo cloud creation.
Yes.
And am I correct to understand that you're only talking at the moment about condo cloud formation?
Yes, exactly. At this point, only condo cloud formation. Yes.
Whether this also takes the topological center layer.
No, this is the condo cloud formation. Exactly, the condo screening formation. Yeah. So I focus on this. I also have results on the IV characteristics, on how the corrections to the conductance change. But I think for this audience, this will be most interesting for the little epilogue that I try to give you. So this is only about the condo screen, condo cloud formation, exactly. Let me make a remark that this result is quite surprising. It actually challenges the folklore that the condo effect is blind to time reversal invariant perturbations. Explicitly, the time reversal invariant perturbations. The perturbation we put on here is a Rushba-Spinobit interaction, which respects time reversal. And drawn from results from a paper by Mayer and Wingren, there has developed a folklore in the community that this formation of the condo screening cloud is insensitive to additions of time reversal invariant perturbations. Now, this is not true according to what we have found here, and I should emphasize that the results in Mayer and Wingren really applies to non-interacting electrons for the ordinary condo effect, whereas we are here looking at interacting electrons for helical edge states. So it's a different context, but showing that one has to be very, very careful with the statement here about the robustness of the condo effect. Okay, so this is essentially what I wanted to tell you. The condo effect in the two-dimensional topological insulator can be controlled via tunable gate voltage. Given the right setup, weak electron-electron screening, implying that you have strong, effectively strong electron-electron interaction, an easy axis condo exchange. I didn't emphasize this, but this picture here with the suppression of the condo effect requires that the longitudinal part is larger than the exchange part here. So there are certain conditions that have to be fulfilled, but can be engineered. And for that, we have a knob by which we can actually turn this effect on and off. Okay, now I assume some of you may be a bit puzzled and think, why should you have to worry about this? Is this just a curiosity for you, or is there possibly any use, future use of this kind of physics? Why should people doing quantum information or quantum simulation or quantum control, why think about this professionally, not just as an audience? Well, there have been a number of proposals that quantum physics may be very useful, possibly useful, for engineering long-distance quantum entanglement between qubits. And let me show you one particular scenario, which I find quite intriguing, proposed by these three authors, Sodano, Bayat, and Bose, a couple of years ago. The starting point here is the so-called condo spin chain, which is defined by this Hamiltonian. So you have a spin chain with two end spins. The spins are all coupled to their nearest and next nearest neighbor, with the left end spin being coupled weaker. So that's an amplitude J prime here, which weakens the nearest and next nearest coupling between the left end spin and these two spins. J prime smaller than one. And as it turns out, this simple little model faithfully emulates the spin properties of the condo model. At low energies, the condo problem separates into physics carrying charge and physics carrying spin. And if you're only interested in spin degrees of freedom, you can equally well use this model here. this is nothing that you are expected to see immediately. It's actually, I would say, a rather deep and unexpected result. It was first found by Eggert and Affleck. The precise statement is that the low energy effective field theory for this system here is identical to that of the quantum model. With one caveat, one has to tune the couplings very, very carefully here. So if J1 is 1, J2 has to be tuned to 0.2412, which is the coupling for the dimerization transition. So for J2 larger than that value, the system would dimerize. And lower than the value, we have the spin liquid. But precisely at that value, that critical value of J2, when we sit at the phase transition point, this system emulates the spin properties of the Kondo problem. And again, I should emphasize that this is now for the ordinary Kondo problem, not Kondo in the helical edge liquid, the problem that I discussed, for which we still have to work out the effective field theory. Or rather, have to work out if there is a possible spin chain emulation of that. Okay, given this, we can define what Jake referred to, the Kondo cloud, that is the region of the spin chain consisting of those spins which are entangled with the left end spin. So the left end spin, which has a weaker coupling to its nearest and next nearest neighbors, plays the role of the impurity. So this shaded region here means that there is entanglement, as measured by negativity, between the left end spin and these spins here. So if I were to measure the entanglement or the negativity between the left end spin and the complement, I would find zero. This is all done on the computer now, so it's not identically zero, but it's a very, very small number and cutoff that one has to choose to do the calculations. Now, importantly, this Kondo cloud, that is the size of the region of spins which are entangled with the left end spin, that region, or that length, Xk here, can be tuned by tuning the coupling to the impurity spin. So by making J prime smaller, this cloud gets bigger. And the picture I've shown you here is the case, what in this context is usually called an optimal Kondo cloud. So it encompasses all the spins in the chain except the right end spin. In other words, the left end spin and the right end spin are non-entangled. The negativity is identically zero, but there is entanglement between the left end spin and this block here. And the corresponding ground state, one calls an optimal ground state, psi O, O for optimal. And given this, one can now do something very simple from the point of view of control. A quantum quench, a local quantum quench at some instant in time. So at this instant in time, say T naught, one weakens this coupling between also the right hand spin and the nearest and next nearest neighbor spins, obtaining a new Hamiltonian. So in effect, we now have a problem, if you wish, with two Kondo impurities. And the resulting state, the time-dependent resulting state, which will now propagate according to this new Hamiltonian, I call psi q of t, q for quench. And this Hamiltonian, this time-dependent state has some absolutely remarkable properties. The entanglement dynamics of this state is very surprising. And this is what was found in the paper by Sodano, Bayate, Bose. And let me show you what happens. By doing DMRG calculations on chains up to 40 sites, I think later they did up to 60 sites, they find that having an optimal Kondo cloud and performing this local quench, very simple thing, you just change one local interaction, one will obtain fast oscillatory and long-lived entanglement between the two end spins, that is, between the two qubits. And of course, this entanglement is possibly useful. Entanglement between qubits, something that could possibly be exploited for some purpose, whereas the entanglement between a single impurity and the whole many-body composite is hard to engineer and use for any purpose. So here is a picture of what comes out. On the vertical axis is entanglement, measured as a negativity between the two end spins. Well, two qubits is just concurrence. And on the horizontal axis is a time. And here are the oscillating entanglement, which is fast compared to what you would find if you did not tune the system to sit with this condo cloud. If you just take an ordinary, choose some other size of the condo cloud, or you tune the condo spin chain away from the critical value, you will find that it takes forever for the two end spins to get entangled at a much, much slower time scale. But here's fast. And you have these oscillations, and maybe most remarkably, the maxima of the entanglement between the qubits is distance independent, as far as one can tell from the numerical simulations, apart from some transient here for short chains. As you go to larger chains, you see that the maximum flattens out to a constant value around 0.9. And there are arguments in the paper that this could possibly be useful for some quantum information, quantum processing purpose. Something that probably you guys are better to evaluate than I am. But. So this is one out of a number of proposals why quantum physics can possibly be made useful, exploited in quantum information or maybe quantum control context. Okay, I've gone over my time, so I thank you very much for listening. Thank you.
Oh,
yes.
So I'm curious, if you don't mind, sort of, this many-body system that you're working with here strikes me as similar to some of the problems that they like to solve. I'm curious if we can, if there is a control problem here associated with the quench. In other words, at the moment, you've chosen a very crude control.
Yeah? Oh, yeah. That's right. It's just a knob. Yes.
So do you think that you could do even much better than this 90% entanglement if we had control just to attack that problem?
As I said, coming from a different community, from condensed matter, learning these things, I cannot possibly have an opinion about whether you got 0.9 and 0.95, or maybe Tommaso could comment on that. I really...
Gatto and Abol Bayat thought this is possible, and at some point Abol was traveling to Ulm to tackle this problem, and then he left London, so this didn't follow up, but they thought it could work.
I think actually, yes.
That's right, but with Martin and for Forsyth, we never, from time to time I tell him we should be doing this, but it's not.
I think actually, I know Abel, and he says he has much better computer resources at your place than at UCL, and he hopes to find a little time before he goes back to actually improve upon these things. And so.
The better of minds. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, in
that context, then there's a real many body theory contribution, which would be part of helpful to understand the quasi particle classification spectrum. Mm.
Very little is actually understood of the spatial properties of the quantum screening cloud. I would say this is the remaining open problem. Everything points to the existence of this quantum screening cloud. In conventional theory, the argument proceeds via dimensional arguments. There is this crossover scale, and the crossover scale in energy implies there is also a crossover length. And then by applying many-body intuition, one infers that that length most likely tells us about how many electrons participate in the interaction with impurity. It's really very vague. Here in this context, things are a little better controlled, I would say, because here Abel and collaborators perform a real calculation of the entanglement as measured by negativity. So they can operationally define the quantum screening cloud as the spins that have entanglement with the impurity. But the detailed structure of this state, even of the ground state, not even coming to the excitations, and the possible experimental implications of this, it's really an open problem. We have seen no experimental, there is no experiment, although the problem has been around for literally half a century, there is no experiment yet in condensed matter physics by which we can say there is a quantum screening cloud. It's really an inferred theoretical construct of which we have a rather vague vague understanding.
But actually, in my opinion, this latter point is a very strong connection with quantum simulation, because with a controlled atomic system, you, in different possible combinations, you could probably achieve some quantitative, I mean, you could probably quantum similar Condo effect in atomic systems.
Could you do such a thing in an optical trap, localize?
In one of my very first experiments before I changed to the theory, we did this.
Oh, this problem.
We do quantum dots in the
interview. Uh-huh. And what did you look for?
So in that case you're looking for the so when you form a condo singlet with the mesoscopic reservoir, there's a zero bias anomaly.
That's true, yes, that's true.
But if you have these two objects actually tangled with each other, then the anomaly goes away.
Okay.
And you can control the size of the cloud by controlling these little J primes, which is basically equivalent to the tunneling rate to the mesoscopic reservoir. So you can tune the tunneling rate above and below transition associated with weather. Mm-hmm.
Could you infer something of this sort
that
you didn't look at that way?
Only in frequency. Basically, in that case, you apply magnetic field to split. Singlet is a critical point. But it's not a direct measure of the existence.
No, I understand. And how large was the system, you say? It was mesoscopic, and the intermediate region here, how many spins? How many spins in the intermediate region?
Well, it wasn't, it was an actual mesoscopic.
It was an actual, so you had like a quantum box or some kind of regional.
All right, very good. Well, I want to thank both.
Okay.